Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is an Our Americana Podcast Network production.
They're going to want to find something. They're going to want, you know, they're going to want the bodies. They're going to want something.
Well, if they can,
and they can't give the families that closure until they find them.
Like, they can in some respects, and I think they've done that in Vermont because, you know, they've corroborated the things you've told them.
Right.
I mean, you obviously knew about the birdcage and, you know, being covered up.
Right.
I mean, they understand that, you know, you're not just putting them on about that.
Right.
And you're right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That Vermont was different. And frankly, you know, things that happened after Vermont were very different from things that I had done prior to that to Vermont.
Sure.
So there's not going to be as many details that
sure.
anybody knows aside from me. There's just not. And like I said, frankly, on some of the stuff, I was shocked at the fact that I'd never heard anything about it,
mm-hmm.
virtually nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that there isn't an investigation or whatever, but it was just never, nothing was ever high profile like the stuff that happened more recently. So.
This is True Crime Bullshit. I'm your host, Josh Hallmark, and this is a serialized story of Israel Keyes.
There are several reasons that Karen S. Adams' disappearance didn't get a significant amount of media coverage. Reasons that go beyond the typical reasons we've grown accustomed to in true crime. Like, she wasn't young, blonde, rich. Or, more cynically, she wasn't editorial enough. But it is worth noting that there are an average of 540,000 people who disappear in America each year. 540,000. That's more than the entire population of Atlanta. Every year. And most people would be hard-pressed to name even three of those missing people. For example, according to a report by KTVB News 7, since 2011, just under 700 indigenous women disappeared from the area Gabby Petito was last seen. Gabby was the only one with national media coverage. In that same article, Boise State University Chair of the Department of Sociology, Dr. Arthur Skerritt, posits this. When cases involve missing white women like Petito's are in the media, it's as if it's being made into a reassurance. This shouldn't happen. It's terrible that it's happened, but at the same time, we're reassuring you that it's an isolated case, and whatever happens, it's going to be brought to justice. And so, therefore, people can feel reassured that it's a random act of violence that shouldn't have happened. And for me, the subtext there is, this shouldn't happen to people like Petito. People like Petito. Karen was 54 years old when she disappeared. She'd shared a trailer with her brother in the woods of western Pennsylvania. She worked as a teacher's aide for disabled individuals at a local non-for-profit school. She had a second job as a clerk at Big Lots. And depending on who you asked, she had a bit of a gambling problem. By media standards, Karen wasn't an editorial victim. And sociologically, Karen's disappearance wasn't one worthy of reassurance. The subtext being, she's poor and hangs out at casinos. She's a white woman, yes, but she's a poor white woman with a gambling problem. But there are so many stories here. Bigger stories. And, more cynically, more editorial stories. The average teacher's aide salary in Allegheny County, where Karen worked, is currently $22,000 a year. That's $2,000 below the county's poverty line. Karen Adams worked as a teacher's aide with some of the most underserved people in America. And she had to take a second job just to get above the poverty line. And I can't think of a more cut and dry way of demonstrating who in America has perceived value and who does not. And when Karen went missing, the media had more editorial, more valuable stories to cover. Like, the local casino was about to get table games. What an economic boon that would be. Karen Adams was last seen on surveillance cameras leaving the Mountaineer Casino and Racetrack in New Cumberland, West Virginia, at around 4 a.m. on Monday, March 12th of 2007. Well, even what should be the simplest and easiest fact to check in this case is not. There are some significant discrepancies surrounding when exactly Karen was seen leaving the casino. Yes, there are discrepancies around a date and time-stamped video. The FBI says Karen was seen leaving at 3 a.m. Namus says 4:31 a.m. And most media outlets covering the case said 4 a.m. And as you may recall, last year we filed a FOIA request, which was eventually denied.
So what happened with Karen Adams?
So with Karen Adams, her FOIA request, I did it just like I do all the other ones. And we gave quite a bit of information to the DA for the county, and he actually had wanted to chat on the phone, but responded to the emails beforehand. So there was never really a need for us to chat on the phone, but I did her request the same way I always do. And after DA Lozier had asked us for the information that we had and, you know, why we were interested in getting her files, he all of a sudden said, well, actually, this case has been reopened and is active once again, and we will not be releasing anything at this time. So, you know, went from, you know, what, let me give you all this information, or let me get all this information from you guys. And then, yeah, it was all of a sudden open. So I'm curious, you know, new information was given. I think it's a 13-year-old case.
So before we sent anything, they basically said it's an open but inactive case, and that they are only sharing information with journalists who are looking into it and have strong leads, right?
Right.
And then as soon as we sent all the information we had linking keys to Karen, they all of a sudden are no longer working with journalists.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm assuming something pretty big must have happened, you know, for them to do that. And I don't know if it was our information that they took, because on those emails, there was a detective copy that I never got a chance to speak to, but the DA actually copied him on the emails quite early on, and but he never spoke up. So I don't know what happened there, but he was on those emails as well and never said a word. So it's odd for sure.
So they did us dirty.
I mean, I would say so. Yeah. I mean,
Now, since that phone call, I have spoken directly with several members of Karen's family. And they had neither heard about the information I sent along, nor, more egregiously, that the case had been reopened. So while I couldn't get confirmation from the files or local law enforcement on when Karen left the casino, I was able to get my hands on a screenshot of that surveillance video. And clear as day, in the upper left corner, it's timestamped at 3:01 a.m. as Karen is seen exiting the casino. But something else happened that weekend that would further convolute Karen's case. Sadly, one thing among many. Something else more editorial than Karen. Almost exactly 24 hours before Karen was last seen leaving the casino, for the first time in American history, as part of the Energy Policy Act of 2005, signed into law by George W. Bush, daylight savings was extended from April into March. At 2 a.m. on Sunday, March 11th, the clocks moved forward 1 hour. And it's unclear whether the casino surveillance cameras were updated or not by the time Karen was seen leaving, either 24 or 25 hours later. And while this squabbling over an hour may seem pedantic, that hour is quite significant in the timeline of Karen's disappearance. TCB is back, and that means Israel Keys is back in my life pretty much nonstop. And thankfully, my BetterHelp therapist Jane and I have worked to make sure that I'm able to balance my time investigating Keys with a healthy dose of self-care. And BetterHelp can help you with whatever your version of Israel Keys is. BetterHelp's online therapy has made it easy to manage every and any part of my life, whether it's the big stuff, trauma, family, the world, or the day-to-day, like not letting a dead serial killer take over every waking minute. And hopefully, like me, BetterHelp is just getting better and better with age. As more and more people turn to BetterHelp's online therapy, BetterHelp has been recruiting even more counselors in all 50 states. And they offer counselors who practice in a wide variety of specializations, like depression, anxiety, relationships, LGBTQ matters, self-esteem, trauma, and more. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/TCB. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCB for 10% off your first month. Traveling the world, looking for clues, connecting the dots, these are the most important components of solving a mystery like the Keys case. And for playing the delightfully mysterious and endlessly fun mobile game, June's Journey. In June's Journey, you'll travel back to the Roaring Twenties and investigate the mysterious death of June Parker's sister. Throughout the game, you'll uncover scandalous secrets as you traverse exotic destinations and surprising new storylines. As you know, my life revolves around investigating true crime and finding respite from it in the scandals and luxury of the housewives. And June's journey is truly the perfect blend of the two. Put your detective skills to use and build the estate of your dreams in this epic, dynamic game that I cannot stop playing. You want to solve mysteries? You got it. You want to bask in the scandals of the elite? They've got that too. Can you crack the case? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
According to multiple reports, Karen's phone was used to check her voicemail at 4:35 a.m. on March 12th. Either 13 minutes or an hour and 13 minutes after she left the casino. And that call registered on a cell phone tower, 18 miles away, in Steubenville, Ohio. This would be the last outgoing call made from Karen's phone. But it's unclear whether it was the last time her phone pinged a cell tower, because there are multiple other reports that state Karen's phone pinged on a tower in Beaver County, Pennsylvania, along Route 30, at some point following her departure from the casino. And years later, the Ohio River and ponds along Route 30 were searched using sonar technology. Searched with no success. So it's unclear if this is a case of either or both and. Also unclear is when, in relation to Karen's disappearance, these pings might have occurred. It takes approximately 25 minutes to drive from Mountaineer Casino and Racetrack to Steubenville, Ohio, which means if Mountaineer's cameras weren't updated before the time change and Karen's disappearance, Karen's phone traveled immediately and directly from the casino to Steubenville, which is in the exact opposite direction of where she lived in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania. But if the casino's cameras were updated, then there's an hour unaccounted for. In that hour, Karen's phone could have traveled along Route 30 into Pennsylvania, the route she most likely would have taken to get home from the casino, before somehow inexplicably turning around and making its way to Steubenville. And if both the Steubenville call and the Pennsylvania pings actually happened, Karen's phone does not have enough time to make it home before the Steubenville call. Because the route from Mountaineer Casino along Route 30 to Aliquippa and back to Steubenville takes an hour and 35 minutes and crosses multiple tolls. Here's what I'll say about those cell phone records. Very likely, it's a case of both and. Karen's cell records show that an outgoing call was made to her voicemail at 4:35 a.m., and Beaver County PD told her family that that call pinged on a Steubenville tower. And there is no way Beaver County is spending thousands of dollars doing multiple sonar searches along Route 30 without actual evidence that her phone made it there following her departure from the casino. Which leaves us with two likely scenarios. One, Karen's phone traveled from the casino southwest to Steubenville. The call was made to check her voicemail. Then at some point thereafter, the phone turned around and made its way back into Pennsylvania along Route 30 before permanently losing signal. Or two, Karen's phone left the casino and traveled northeast along Route 30 toward her home before abruptly changing direction and backtracking past the casino to Steubenville, a town that all who knew her agreed Karen had no connection to. But that second scenario can only be true if the casino hadn't updated their surveillance cameras in the wake of the updated time change. Because if Karen left the casino at 4:01 a.m., her phone would have to immediately start heading to Steubenville in order for the 4:35 a.m. call to ping there. She'd have 9 minutes to get from the security camera to her car and then depart. And here's the thing. The furthest Karen could have parked from where she exited the casino was 600 feet. It's not even a 3-minute walk. 9 minutes is more than doable. Unfortunately, we don't know whether the time change was ever considered or updated on the surveillance cameras, because the FOIA was denied and the casino responded to my inquiry with merely, "We have no comments to make. Thank you." According to members of Karen's family, the casino wasn't particularly cooperative during the investigation into Karen's disappearance. They told me that it took the casino 6 months to send surveillance footage, and when it arrived, it was heavily edited. Allegedly, the casino removed any footage that included other casino patrons in an effort to protect their privacy. Karen's family also told me that the casino repeatedly removed missing flyers that they had posted at the premises and around the area in the wake of Karen's disappearance. And again, unfortunately, the casino was unwilling to chat with me to corroborate or deny or respond to these claims. There's something else, though, that Karen's family told me about the casino. They said that when Karen was last seen leaving Mountaineer, the casino had applied for and was pending a table game license. When Karen went missing, the casino offered bingo, Karen's favorite, racetrack betting, and slot machines. According to the American Gaming Association, it had a 2006 revenue of $258 million. And in 2007, it began using that revenue to expand the casino and its offerings. An article in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, dated December 20th, 2007, wrote that Mountaineer was approved for ribbon cutting on their new table games on that day, December 20th, and that they received approval to host table games on June 30th of 2007. And according to most articles that I read, this was something that was approved by ballot measures at the county level. Meaning, in all likelihood, Karen's family was right. Karen went missing while the casino was pending approval for table games. So, where does Israel Keys fit into all of this? Well, there are a lot of factors in Karen's disappearance that line up with what we know about Keys' MO, his travels, and his own statements regarding his abductions. Let's start with the most obvious. Karen's photos were found on Keys' computer, a computer that he only had in his possession for a year and a half prior to his arrest. Meaning, he was looking into, or at least at Karen, more than 3 years after she disappeared. And then there's the Namus cluster that includes Karen.
Computers, you mentioned when computers first came out, you started doing searches and looked, just wanted to see what was up with the military guys. When you would, you talked before with us about there were a couple times that you would go on your computer and do a search just to see if a body had been found or, I don't know, arson or bank robbery or whatever it is. When you were doing it, how would you do that? I mean, did you know names of everybody or would you do just Google search a town and, or how would you do it?
I was with the exception of the computer that you guys got, I generally wouldn't do it on the home computers. I had another computer that I did use for a while, but for the most part, if it was a computer that I was planning on having around for a while, I would never do right. searches on it. The searches I did do were usually pretty generic. I would type in an area or a newspaper of an area and type in a keyword. I would never type in a specific name.
Not a name. The name of the newspaper from the area? Like if it,
I don't know. I would do
Burlington Press.
Right, so yeah, I would do a search of news from an area, I guess, and then pull up either a newspaper or news channel, online news.
Mm-hmm.
Type in a keyword of something and just scroll down the different stories till I found the one I was looking okay. for. If I was doing it from an anonymous computer, like an airport or a library or something, I would just type in what I wanted right yeah. away and bring it up.
Did you know the names? Or did you remember the names of most of the people?
Yeah, well, yeah. Like on the major things, yeah.
Okay.
As I mentioned in the previous episode, 4 of the Namus 44 disappeared along Route 7, which travels from eastern Kentucky along the Ohio River to Lake Erie. Or, more familiarly to us, it travels from U.S. Route 30 toward Route 2. The route Heidi Keys told the FBI that both she and Israel took from Harlan to Constable. And speaking of Harlan, Indiana, Heidi Keys moved there in 2006. And all 4 of those missing women and girls, Ashley Summers, Lorianne Boffman, Karen Adams, and Aaliyah Lunsford, went missing after Heidi moved from Maine to Harlan. 3 of whom, Summers, Boffman, and Adams, went missing within a year of Heidi moving from Maine to Harlan. There are strong suspects in both the Summers and Lunsford cases. So, if Keys was actively searching for a victim amid that cluster, it was likely Karen Adams or Lorianne Boffman. And of those 2 cases, Karen's more closely lines up with what we know about Israel Keys. Keyes's timeline is also incredibly suspicious in the days and weeks surrounding Karen's disappearance. On March 1st, 10 days before Karen Adams entered the Mountaineer Casino, Keyes packed up his house in Nia Bay and began his move to Anchorage. And there are quite a few odd things about that move. For starters, Keyes had at least 1 car that disappeared that week. In Keyes' final months in Nia Bay, he had a boat, a trailer, and 2 cars registered in his name in Washington State. As we're all aware, the boat was given to his friend Dave, and Keyes drove his Ford F-150 and his trailer to Anchorage. But he also had a white Pontiac Grand Am registered in his name. The Washington State registration would have expired on June 19th that year, over 3 months after his move to Anchorage. And while the trailer and Ford were both eventually registered in Alaska, the Pontiac was not. And there's no known bill of sale for it. Now, as far as the files show, the FBI only ran license and plate searches in Washington and Alaska. So it's possible that Keyes moved and later registered that Pontiac in New York or Maine, which would have required a cross-country trip. But all we know for sure is that Keyes had it in Washington, and it never made it to Anchorage. And it doesn't appear to have ever been sold, at least not on the up-and-up. The second odd thing about his move, which we've also previously discussed, is that shortly after leaving Nia Bay, Keyes disappeared. Keyes began his drive to Alaska on March 1st. But after March 1st, there's no records of him being anywhere until March 5th, when he reserved a room at a hotel in Cache Creek, British Columbia, which is just a 9-hour drive from Nia Bay. No reported border crossing, no available cell data, no travel records, nothing, for 4.5 days. Well, not quite nothing. There is a single transaction made at a hardware store on March 5th, the same day he allegedly arrived in British Columbia, Canada. That hardware store, though, does not exist in Canada, or Washington, or even Alaska, or, frankly, anywhere west of El Paso, Texas. And according to the FBI's transactions report, this transaction occurred in store. Northern Tool has over 100 stores located in just 21 states. And in addition to Washington, Alaska, and all of Canada, New York and Maine are also states where they don't have locations. So Keyes likely traveled somewhere east of the Rockies while he was missing en route to Anchorage. And of all his hotel reservations that he made along the way on this little road trip, the Cache Creek Hotel on the 5th is the only one the FBI has no confirmation of. They have the reservation, but no evidence that Keyes actually checked in or ever paid for that hotel. So Keyes was missing for at least 4.5 days, but possibly for up to a week, when transaction records do place him at a hotel in Watson Lake, Yukon, on March 7th. The last odd thing about this trip, which could be related to the two prior oddities, involves Keyes' guns. Keyes told the FBI that he didn't want to move his guns across the Canadian border, since some of them had been used in the commission of crimes, and none of them were registered in his name. And we know that he left one or two of his guns with his friend Lucas, but we also know he had many more than just one or two guns while in Washington State. He and multiple people close to him discuss multiple types of guns Keyes had and used while living in Nia Bay. But only one or two ended up with Lucas. What happened to the rest? Here he is trying really hard to explain where his guns went during and following the move to Alaska. And he's a damn mess trying to keep it all together.
No, Lucas talked about, you know, you picking up some guns that, you know, you had, that he held for you.
Right.
Can we assume those are in caches, or?
Probably,
We
you came up in 2007, so before you drove the Elcan, you gave them to him.
Right.
And then you went, were back, were you back in that area in 2008 when you visited Green River, Wyoming? And so could they be in Green River?
One of the guns he had in it was in that cache in New York.
That we have?
Yeah.
Which one was that?
It was a Ruger 1022 that was, that I, after I brought it up here, I flew it. Yeah, that's why it was in, that's why I left it with him, because you know, it's a long gun, so. So I've been, it was one of the ones I was thinking about cutting down. I just hadn't got around to it, and so I left it, left that with him, and then I think I flew it up here, and then worked on it up here, and made some modifications, and then took it back to, anyway, it, it ended up in the one in New York. But that's why he ended up with the guns. There, there was that one, and I know that I think there was at least one other that he had that he was holding.
Yeah, I think he, I thought, I have to look back, but I thought he told us about a handgun. That makes sense that he had a handgun.
Yeah, there was, I want to, like you say, there was at least one other gun. They were all in one case, like one rifle case, I think. And the 1022s, they're, they're too big to cache unless you cut them down. So.
So the other one, the handgun, maybe is cached, or did you bring that back up here too?
I don't know which one. I don't. Yeah, I don't remember which one was in that case, or if there was more. I just remember that's why he, I asked him to hold on to them, because of that 1022. Otherwise, I just would have buried them all in Washington.
Oh,
it was just easier to have him hold them.
Do you have a cache in Washington? Is there guns buried in Washington?
There's stuff buried in Washington.
So what about anybody besides Dave? Did you leave any guns or anything else with anyone else in the bay besides Dave?
No. Well, I sold some guns, but they were I sold at least one to another coworker. But it was mine. Yeah, it had always been mine. I just didn't, it wasn't an Alaska gun, so, and I wasn't much into hunting anymore, so I just sold it to him. It was like a hunting rifle.
How many guns would you say you've had over the years? Lots. Can you go through
ever?
Several guns a year? No, in the last 10 years.
10 years? I don't know. I don't...
Meaning,
the ones that are buried, I don't really consider mine.
Were they yours?
Some of them,
okay.
But, I mean, depends on your definition.
well, I know if you take them, they're yours, but...
Right.
They become yours.
No, I'm, I mean, the guns that get buried right away and that I don't dig up or move around or whatever, those aren't, you know, some of those aren't mine. That's why they're buried.
When you say the ones that are yours, where did you usually get them from?
I always got my guns from private party sales. Sometimes there would be, I mean, you know how it is. Sometimes you take down driver's license information with somebody you don't even know, and, you know, and that's it. I never registered any of them. And I'm guessing a lot of the people I got guns from didn't have them registered before me. There's people who just swap guns all the time.
Mm-hmm. Especially up here.
It's like a hobby or something.
Well, at least you're getting those guns off the street.
Right.
So
It's kind a lot of what I do that could be considered public service. Yeah. So.
So, for 5 to 7 days during his move, but prior to showing up in Canada, keys, one of his cars, and at least a few of his guns all disappear. And during that time, Keys makes an in-store transaction at a hardware store somewhere between El Paso, Texas, and Norfolk, Virginia. And while there are over 100 Northern Tool stores, it's worth noting that there are 4 located along U.S. Route 30. One in Omaha, Nebraska, 22 miles south of Route 30. One directly on Route 30 in Merrillville, Indiana. Say her name 3 times and she shall appear. And one in Fort Wayne, Indiana. 1.5 miles from Route 30. And 15 miles from Heidi Keyes' house in Harlan. And that will be of great interest in just a moment. Traveling the world, looking for clues, connecting the dots, these are the most important components of solving a mystery like the Keys case, and for playing the delightfully mysterious and endlessly fun mobile game, June's Journey. In June's Journey, you'll travel back to the Roaring Twenties and investigate the mysterious death of June Parker's sister. Throughout the game, you'll uncover scandalous secrets as you traverse exotic destinations and surprising new storylines. As you know, my life revolves around investigating true crime and finding respite from it in the scandals and luxury of the housewives. And June's Journey is truly the perfect blend of the two. Put your detective skills to use and build the estate of your dreams in this epic, dynamic game that I cannot stop playing. You want to solve mysteries? You got it. You want to bask in the scandals of the elite? They've got that too. Can you crack the case? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
One thing that comes up in the FBI files over and over again is that, despite family tensions, Keyes spent a lot of time visiting with his family. It's reflected in the timeline, in tips from friends and family, and even in interviews with Tammy. And when you compare Keyes' known travels with his family members' birthdays, there is a lot of crossover. And at least 16 of his trips between 2001 and 2012 coincide with a family birthday. And there are multiple times where Keyes suspiciously disappears and/or turns off his phone around or on a family member's birthday. In many of my conversations with people and in the FBI interviews, it seems that these visits were almost an expectation. In one such FBI interview with Heidi, she expresses deep disappointment that when Keyes was in New York in April of 2009, while he was robbing the Tupper Lake Bank and killing Deborah Feldman, he didn't drive the 368 miles to Maine to visit his brothers. And this interview, this disappointment in him, is literally years later. Well, we have Keyes missing from March 1st through either March 5th or March 7th. At that same time, some of his guns and possibly a car also go missing. Keyes is allegedly en route to Alaska via Canada, but has a transaction at a hardware store that only serves the South and Midwest, with one store just 15 miles from Heidi's house. We also know that Keyes has a history of stashing guns at and around Heidi's. So as we've established, Keyes has a recorded and well-known history of visiting family members on their birthdays, and Keyes goes missing between March 1st and either the 5th or 7th. And on the 5th, he makes an in-store transaction at a hardware store somewhere in the South or Midwest. Heidi Keyes' birthday is March 3rd.
You talked once in one of the interviews about kind of having, trying to set up alibis during some of your crimes. Can you elaborate a little bit more on what kind of alibis you'd set up, and would you pass your cell phone off to other people to hang on to, or different things like that, or is it more just...
No, I never was specific with anyone.
You never passed
your
phone?
There was a lot of stuff that I did with it was... No, I would do it in conjunction with something else that was going on. A pretty tight timeline, if you could say, so that if it ever came up, then it's not like I would be in a situation where I had to explain where I was for days on end or something. That was more along the lines, but I never had any... say alibis, like people who would vouch for me or something. No,
but the timeline would make it look like it was difficult for you to...
Right.
All this is to say, for now at least, that the week prior to Karen's disappearance was a strange one for pinning down Keyes. But so was the week that she actually disappeared. Keyes finally arrived in Alaska on March 9th of 2007, when he crossed the Alcan border between the Yukon and Alaska. Depending on when that border crossing occurred, he could have arrived in Anchorage earlier that night or the next afternoon. But based on hotel records, I'm inclined to believe he didn't make it to the border until the evening of March 9th, making it unlikely that he would have arrived at Kimberly's house any time before the evening of March 10th. But here's the thing, we don't even know that he did arrive at Kimberly's house at any point before March 15th, because no one ever commented on his arrival. Not even him. We just have transaction and border crossing records. And to add to that, on the morning of March 11th, Kimberly left alone for a 9-day work trip on the Kenai Peninsula. And again, Keyes almost immediately became a ghost. No travel records, no available cell phone records, no transactions, no contact, no sightings, until March 15th, when he makes an in-store transaction at a Home Depot in Anchorage. So Keyes is completely unaccounted for from March 1st through the 5th, and then again from March 9th, when he crosses the border, until March 15th. Karen Adams was last seen at the Mountaineer Casino at either 3 or 4 a.m. on March 12th, just a 4.5-hour drive from Harlan, Indiana, en route to Constable, New York. And when it comes to coincidence and circumstantial evidence, that is just the tip of a very big iceberg. And the story of a woman who deserved so much more. than she got.
With your hand, you kept a real world outside. I hear you when you hear me through the songs we cannot be.
This episode was written, produced, and researched by me, your host, Josh Hallmark, with additional research by Andrew French and Shayna Walensky, and research assistance by Michelle Tooker and Kaz. Research sources include the Elwood City Ledger, the Charlie Project, Namus, KTVB News 7, and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. This episode featured Bobby Chacon, and it was made possible by the following Patreon producers: Alexa Horn, Amy Basil, Chelsea Collings, Christina Sassoon, Ellen Haynes Chaponis, Dana Keith, Drew Vipond, Hallie Reed, Jessica Hallie Hodzik, Jillian Natale, Kimberly, Megan Capps Sewell, Shelley, Tuesday Woodsworth, Zach Ignatowitz Warren, and Lydia Fiedler. Thank you to True Crime Bullshit's newest Patreon supporters, JCH, John C., Molly D., Melissa D., Nolan H., Shannon F., Carly C., Brandy C., Logan C., Anthony C., Mary W., Rhonda T., Marlon A., and Matt B. This episode included music by William Hellfire, Sergei Cheremisinov, and Kai Engel, with featured music by HVOB.
Through the songs, we cannot be.